This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. The number of known coronavirus cases has passed 1,000 in the United States. And as public health experts keep reminding us, testing is lagging. So the actual number of infections is almost certainly much higher. Last evening at the White House, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases Director Anthony Fauci made it clear to Americans that mitigating coronavirus now means life has to change.
We would like the country to realize that as a nation, we can't be doing the kinds of things we were doing a few months ago.
Schools are closing across America. Sporting events are being played in front of empty bleachers. Meetings and conventions are getting canceled. Officials in Washington state are banning gatherings of more than 250 people. And across the country, businesses are adopting to this new reality. And that's where we start today. How does business change when staying apart is the best strategy? And what happens to workers when businesses inevitably slow down? And we've been hearing from a lot of you.
My name's Keith from Goodyear, Arizona. I'm a truck driver, and I'm concerned about the coronavirus. We travel all over the country. As a matter of fact, today I'm going into Seattle. We also use community restrooms at rest areas and truck stops where you come in contact with hundreds of people every day.
Hi, this is Monica from St. Louis. I'm a Pilates teacher, and coronavirus has directly impacted my finances. I have clients who are directly related to one of the outbreaks we had, which also means they are not coming back for a couple weeks, which directly impacts the amount of money I can make. Also, I have other clients feeling very anxious and nervous about this, who are also not coming.
My name is Anthony DeJulian. I'm from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I have a consulting business in the world of professional fishing. The coronavirus has set me back to the tune of losing probably 70% of my business for the next 6 months. Much of my business relies on international travel. I've had trips canceled to Egypt and Saudi Arabia in the last 4 days. I don't know what I'm going to do. My business is in jeopardy of going bankrupt.
The voices of you, 1A listeners, and the impact of coronavirus and social distancing, the economy, on your work and your businesses. Thank you to Keith and Monica and Anthony for sharing your stories with us. Those sound like difficult stories. We're going to talk now about coronavirus, its impact on business, large, small, and independent. Emmanuel Nigro joins us from NPR in New York. He's the owner of Osteria 57. That's an Italian restaurant in the West Village in Manhattan. Emmanuel, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Todd, and thank you for having me.
How is it going down at Osteria 57?
How it's going? I wish it was going better. I have to say that in the last week, we have seen a tremendous drop in the amount of business, and any large gathering that we had above 8-10 people has been canceled.
How many employees, Emmanuel?
We have a little bit above 20 employees.
Now, restaurants are difficult places when it comes to the spread of germs and bacteria. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing within the business to try to protect employees. I mean, they have to come to work. Somebody can't do their job for you via Skype.
No, absolutely. There's no way of working from home in a restaurant. So the number one thing, as you said, for us is the safety of our employees and our customers, just on the same level. So number one, we told everyone that is not feeling good to let us know and to take a couple of days before returning to work. And of course, you know, implementing hygiene measures at the restaurant, you know, washing your hands, but also like people that are preparing food, we are forcing them every single second to use gloves, to use a mask also when they're in contact with food that is being prepared to be given to the customers, people that carry the food to the table also. You know, we're a small restaurant, but we still are in contact with about 3,000 people every week. Mm-hmm. And so we're very concerned about, you know, doing everything right.
So, Emmanuel, the West Village in New York is a dense neighborhood. I know, I'm sure that you have regulars. I'm sure that you know many of your neighbors. What are customers saying to you about their willingness to come and join you for dinner?
As you said, you know, it's a very dense area, and it's also very unique area of New York. I feel that, like, you know, population is extremely educated. We have many teachers from NYU that we have seen not coming in. NYU has also taken their class online, and it's about to take them entirely online. Many customers just told us, you know, honestly, you won't be seeing us much. You know, if we can, we'll get out of the city and just let this wave of virus pass.
Now, what are you saying to employees? You mentioned some of the safety mitigation factors, keeping people clean, keeping hands clean, food handlers, and the rest of it. But the restaurant business is tenuous during a good year. Are you starting to think about temporary layoffs? Or what are you telling workers about the number of hours they can expect?
So we told everyone that, you know, they're going to be our first priority. And before we actually get to cutting people off, we're going to wait for things to really get bad. I'm from Milan, where the situation is pretty bad, I would say, right now, if not the worst in the Western world. And so I'm very close to what is about to happen in New York City. You know, I hope that it's not going to get to that point, but all of the signs point in that direction. The difference between Italy and the U.S. is that in Italy, a lot of people eat at home, while in New York City, even if people were to buy all of the food in the supermarkets, that would not be enough to feed, I don't know how many of the people that are in New York. So restaurants are going to have a responsibility to continue to feed people. We know they might not come into the restaurant. We are implementing deliveries, staying open more hours than we normally would, and asking our employees to be flexible with us, you know, so opening the restaurants during the day where we usually are closed so that some of them can work during the day. And we don't need many people at work at the same time because there's not a huge volume to handle. But we have asked a little effort from everyone in understanding that, you know, we'll be supportive of them. And if they can help us, you know, if we stay open, it's good for both of us.
Now, Emmanuel, we got a voicemail from a listener who has a business model that's insulated him from the loss of clients his colleagues are currently facing. And now they want to get in on it as well.
Hi, this is Bradley in Columbus, Ohio. I teach live online group jazz piano lessons. In the last few days, I've had several requests from my fellow music teachers because they want to learn how to teach online in place of in-person lessons. The students are not attending because of fear of spreading the coronavirus. So I put together a quick course to help my colleagues keep their studios running online and deal with the financial stress that lack of live attendance has created.
Now, Emmanuel, you're from Italy, of course. So what are your family and friends back home saying to you about life in Milan now?
So that's what really worries me the most, because Italians a couple of weeks ago were saying, you know, just keep going with your life as usual. You know, don't let the virus scare you too much. You know, wash your hands, but be safe. You know, continue with life, keep businesses open. And right now they're actually, even when they're told that they can stay open, restaurants are closing during the day, bars have to close mandatorily at 6 p.m. And even Italians, which are, you know, a little bit let's go about life as usual, they are realizing how bad the situation is. And that's what is worrying me the most here in New York City. The messages that we receive also from the city are like, keep going on with business when New York City is open as usual. But, I mean, should it really be open as usual? We didn't receive much guidelines except wash your hands as far as a safety measure that we have to take inside the restaurant. And we feel that we have been taking the initiative on telling people what to do.
Taking the initiative yourself, maybe with a sense from back home about how things could really drastically change in the near future.
Yes, everything, you know, even buying sanitizer and wipes, it has been a challenge. You know, we had to like buy overpriced sanitizer solution and make it ourselves.
Well, Emmanuel Nigro, owner of Osteria 57 in the West Village in Manhattan, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Todd.
It's still to come. We're going to hear more of your stories about how the coronavirus outbreak is affecting work. We got this from Leslie. I'm a professional storyteller. Due to the coronavirus, storytelling events are being canceled all over the country, including an Earth Day event I was booked to perform at in Seattle. It's devastating to us small performers because when a gig is canceled, we don't get paid. More to come. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from our sponsor, Target. Entrepreneur Ray Phillips reflects on the mentorship and support he's received from Target throughout his journey.
really to have a company like Target extend a helping hand and guide us along in the process, it makes all the difference for any striving company looking to play on a higher level.
Learn more about how Target supports diverse entrepreneurs at target.com/founderswelove.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle so you can share what you know. On the News Roundup, find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
On a secret military recording, a sound so haunting, one scientist believed it could change the world.
My mind was racing as I listened to this, and I thought, this is the way.
Join NPR's Invisibilia for the first episode of our new season.
It's 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. Let's add two new voices to our conversation about how coronavirus is affecting the workplace in America. Pamela Loprest is a labor economist in the Income and Benefits Policy Center at the Urban Institute. Pamela, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
And John Chuang is here. He's the CEO of Aquint. They're a creative staffing agency specializing in temporary work. John, thanks for making time for us.
Hi, Todd. Great to be here.
Brandon tweets, I'm glad to see that steps are being taken to protect hourly workers. As an independent marketing and product development consultant, I don't know how I'm going to maintain. Small business isn't just brick and mortar. I would like to see some attention paid to the contract economy. And Phyllis writes, I'm a classical singer, and I've watched with sadness and worry as theaters close and concerts and festivals are canceled all over the world. Performing artists are losing a gigantic percentage of what was already a tenuous income, and no, we cannot work from home. Pamela, we've been hearing from a lot of workers. We just heard from a small business owner in New York whose restaurant has been affected by coronavirus. We've looked at coronavirus from so many different angles, public health, government, the economy, markets. What about work? Emmanuel is one restaurant owner in New York. How is the virus affecting employers and their employees overall? What's the big picture?
So you see in the news and everywhere how the economy is being affected. Businesses like the restaurant you just spoke to, but also large industries, the cruise ship industry, travel industry, large businesses are being affected. And that means that their employees are affected. They're in danger of losing hours or even losing their jobs. And for low-wage workers, that's a real concern. There's also a lot of discussion about how we can have workers, as you said, work at home. But some workers can't do that. And even workers who could be given time off to go home are not covered by leave. Going home and not going to work means losing their paycheck, and that's really important.
John, what are your clients saying to you? I mean, it seems to me there's a dual effect here. There's the mitigation strategy. Hey, people, stay home if you can. If you have a restaurant like we just heard, staying home means not working. There is no FaceTime ability to serve a special at Osteria 57. Then there's also economic slowdown system-wide, which means recession or layoff-like conditions, which is a related but a separate issue. What are your clients saying?
Yeah, I think there are two different types of clients. They break out into roughly two areas. You have the very large companies where we can be proud of all these large companies for essentially doing the right things. They are telling their people, if you are affected, no problem, we will still pay you. And they're doing that especially with not only the employees, but also with their contract workers, which is really great. But then you have small businesses. And I think there the difference is quite striking. Small businesses do not have the financial capacity to deal with pandemics and large disruptions in the economy. And they are cutting back. If you work for a smaller company, there's not that balance sheet. There's just not that cash cushion to be able to deal with global health emergencies. And those companies are not doing well at all.
Well, we got a couple of voicemails from listeners who are contract or independent workers. Here's what they had to say about how coronavirus is affecting their work.
Hi, my name is Caitlin. I live in Nashville, Tennessee. I am a musician. A lot of us who make our living touring and playing shows are pretty worried about how this is going to affect us. A lot of shows have started to be canceled. South by Southwest is canceled. And, you know, we don't get to work from home. We don't get a salary if we don't do our shows.
This is Lauren from Atlanta. I'm an independent contractor, music therapist, and I've had about 50% of my contracts canceled for this month due to working with assisted living populations and the school district. And my services have been put on hold until further notice due to the coronavirus.
John Chuang, you work with a lot of temporary workers and contractors. What's the biggest concern with these kinds of workers? We've talked about leave and the fact that they simply don't have paid leave. What else are you hearing?
Yep. First of all, I think we have to make a difference between those who work for staffing companies or temp agencies and those who work for the gig economy, and then those who work for independent contractors. Those who work for temporary agencies and staffing companies are getting paid as employees. So those folks are getting, all the worker protection laws that we know, such as minimum wage, overtime, unemployment, and the fact that 13 states and 30 cities, which account for approximately 50% of the U.S. population, mandate sick leave. Anyone who's working for a temp agency gets that sick leave. And that's around 10 million workers in the United States. However, there's approximately another 10 million workers in the United States who work for gig economy companies. And the issue here is that these gig economy companies have kind of self-selected out of all these employee protections. So they do not follow minimum wage, they do not follow workers' comp, overtime, and most important, they don't follow state-mandated sick time laws. So no one gets these. So it really depends, when you're working in the overall contingent extended workforce, it really depends on what kind of firm you're working for. Some firms provide coverage and are responsible employees and even give health insurance. For instance, my company, Aquent, in 1993, we gave full comprehensive health insurance to all our temporary employees. But then you have other firms like a lot of the gig economy firms that not only avoid all employer protection laws, but they also give no health insurance. A company like Uber, for example, I would say 90% of all companies Uber's size give health insurance to their employees, but Uber and all the other gig companies do not. And that's a real problem.
I mean, John, this has been a massive debate with Uber and similar companies for years about, it's been in the courts, it's been in referenda about whether people who drive, in this case, who drive for Uber, are employees or independent contractors, what their status is. It's an important debate, but now in what could be an emergency situation, this is really slapped into some hard reality for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's official now. The gig economy companies are a public health risk. They do not give sick leave for their employees, which means that if you are not, the number one, until we have a vaccine, the number one response is to the virus is social distancing. So if you're not feeling well, you have to stay home. But of course, how do you afford to stay home if you don't have sick leave? And for Uber drivers, for example, they disproportionately make up the bottom 20% of U.S. They're in the bottom 20% of U.S. Wage earners. So it's an affordability issue for them. And so because they offer no sick leave, those that are not feeling well are sort of put in this really difficult choice to whether to stay home or to go to work to provide for their family. And they should not have to make that choice. They should be able to stay home. And then on top of it, how do they get better? 90% of companies Uber size would be giving health insurance to employees. In fact, Uber does give health insurance to its white collar employees, but for its service employees, they don't. And again, you know, for 10 million folks who work in the gig economy, you know, not the 10 million folks who work for the temporary help or the staffing industry, it's a real problem.
Well, Uber drivers and Lyft drivers and drivers of all stripes out there love 1A. They love the radio, and we love them too. So I'm glad we're really drilling down on this issue of gig workers, not all of whom are drivers, but many of whom are drivers. This is a serious problem. We're going to take a pause in just a minute. We've been hearing from so many listeners about coronavirus and work and emails. I'm a photographer, and most of my work is with Indiana University. So far, 5 assignments have been canceled. I'm happy to have savings, but I wonder if this is going to shift how folks run the university. This can increase more online education, lead to generally fewer events at the university that I can shoot. Well, anxiety around coronavirus isn't only about staying healthy. There are a lot of Americans, small business owners, hourly workers. We're talking about those gig workers who cannot afford to stay home. We're going to talk a lot more about them, and we're going to hear from a lot of you. We're talking to Pamela Loprest, labor economist in the Income and Benefits Policy Center at the Urban Institute, and John Chuang. He's the CEO of Aquent, their creative staffing agency that specializes in temporary work. A lot more from our guests and from you in just a moment. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's 1A.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Uber. Uber is committed to safety and to continuously raising the bar to help make safer journeys for everyone. For starters, all drivers are background checked before their first ride and screened on an ongoing basis. And now, Uber has introduced a brand new safety feature called Ride Check, which can detect if a trip goes unusually off course and check in to provide support. To learn more about Uber's commitment to safety, visit uber.com/safety.
Hi, I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and I am the new host of NPR's TED Radio Hour. I am so excited because we are working on a bunch of new, amazing episodes. We're exploring big ideas about reinvention, making amends, and the psychological effects of climate change. Our first show drops March 13th. Please join me.
We're talking about coronavirus and the workplace with Pamela Loprest, a labor economist in the Income and Benefits Policy Center at the Urban Institute, and John Chuang. He's the CEO of Aquent. They're a creative staffing agency that specializes in temporary work. We got this from Peter, who says, I'm a farmer and food production is seasonal and time critical. I can't not work or there will be no crop to sell and no income. If too many farmers and farm workers are too sick to work, there will be a crisis in our food supply. And we've been hearing from a lot more of you who are being directly impacted by coronavirus.
Hi, my name is Colby Jones. I live in Kent, Washington, which is about 25 minutes outside of Seattle. I am a property manager for a multifamily community. And they recently opened the King County quarantine zone directly across the street from me. And what this is causing is a lot of anxiety in my community, as well as several of my residents wanting to be released from their leases. And I have several prospective clients who are wanting to withdraw applications just due to being so close.
Good morning. My name is Bob. I'm calling from central New Hampshire. I'm actually a window washer. I wash glass year-round and come in contact with an awful lot of doors. So I haven't really changed my routine. I still need to go to work every day. I still need to wash the doors. However, this coronavirus has got me thinking maybe I should avoid doing doors for the next month or so.
Pamela, there are so many parts of the economy to think about. As soon as you think about restaurants, then farmers pop up. As soon as you think about farmers, musicians, gig workers, drivers pop up. As soon as you think about them, door washers and people who work around buildings. I mean, people who wash windows and doors might also be out of work if the buildings close because everybody's working from home.
Absolutely. This shows you how connected our economy is. And we haven't even talked about businesses that use parts or sell items from affected areas in the world like China that don't have those items coming in. So I think we're seeing just the beginning of how this is going to affect our economy and affect workers, you know, across the country in all different kinds of work.
Pamela, Rebel King says this: the one thing that nobody's talking about are the truly small businesses. My wife and I have our shop and one part-time employee. If people start getting quarantined and cannot shop, we lose our income and we're in serious trouble. Nothing proposed seems to be geared toward people like us. Payroll tax breaks mean nothing if there's no money to pay people in the first place, Pamela.
Absolutely. I think that's right. And for the, you know, their worker too, a small business, a lot of them do not have the money to pay, are paying paid sick leave or paying leave for people. And frankly, they're working on a small margin. And so there's a lot of possibilities for unemployment and for people to lose their jobs.
I want to ask you both about potential long-term effects on the economy. It might sound like I'm asking for predictions, and I know you're not public health experts, so you can keep them in a box if you want to, but you're both economic experts of a kind. And John, you're the kind of expert that has his own business, and you're a CEO. So when you look at your clients, at their needs, what they're telling you when they call you during the day, and even your own employees, analysts on Wall Street are starting to warn of a recession, but you're a business owner. How do you see it?
Yeah. No, I think, you know, hopefully this crisis, this unfortunate crisis, will spur changes in the economy that will have positive, long-lasting effects. The first thing that we can do is offer federal sick leave pay for small and mid-sized businesses. So the federal government should literally pay that that small business money to help give sick leave for their employees or themselves. So we need that. Second thing that we can do is we can make gig workers employees. They should not be independent and left, you know, to their own devices without the support of a large company. There are plenty of very wealthy, high market cap gig companies out there with plenty of resources. And by just by enforcing misclassification laws, essentially these gig workers could now be covered by the worker norms that we've all, you know, grew up with, such as minimum wage, such as unemployment, such as workers' comp, and such as overtime laws. So by doing very simple things, we could put lots of workers under the employee-employer umbrella and give them the coverage that our company, that our country is social welfare system is designed to do, and that is through the employer-employee relationship. In the United States, we do not have national health insurance. We don't have a lot of national coverages. The coverages that help people come through the employer-employee relationship. And by having people work as independent contractors and gig workers outside that relationship, we have a problem. So we either need things like national health insurance or we put people in the more American way, right, is to put people under the employee-employee relationship and have the coverage, have the companies compete for workers by offering not only salary, but offering great benefits. And hopefully, because of this crisis, we can start taking positive actions to end misclassification and make sure that a lot of our independent workers are treated as employees and come under worker protection laws.
Pamela, what about you? You can comment on what John have to say if you like, and I'd also like to hear your view of the economy now as we go forward. I guess we don't know exactly how bad or how good the situation might be.
Well, I totally agree about the point about gig workers, but I do have to add that we have to remember that the majority of workers in our economy are not gig workers, and yet many of them do not have paid leave and do not have health insurance and the benefits that that we're talking about. So I think that this crisis is shining a light on some of the real holes in our economy and how workers are very vulnerable. So if we can take a silver lining from it to try and shine a light on that, and not only I agree with the policies that that we're talking about, but also maybe we need to think about mandating paid sick leave for all employees and helping out the small businesses with being able to afford that. But many workers don't have that right now. So I do think that we don't know how bad this is going to be and how the economy how bad the economy will get. But it is time for us to think about how vulnerable a lot of frontline low-wage workers are.
Well, we got this from Aaron, who writes, we own a pub. A Social Security tax cut won't help us or our employees at all. What would help? Grants to pay people if they have to stay home sick. Grants to help us make it through a couple of weeks if we had to close. The people who are most problematic in this are the ones who can't afford to take off sick because they have no sick pay. Pamela, Aaron is the type of business owner, small business owner that you've been talking about, and her employees sound like the types of employees that you've been talking about as well, who can't afford to take time off. She's calling for direct grants to help pay people if they have to stay home. Does that fall under the category of direct sick leave? Is that what that is?
Yes, and I think that is one way that the federal government could help. She points out that, you know, a payroll tax holiday won't help that, but that direct payments would. I also want to say that some employers who I think have been on the fence about whether offering paid leave to their workers, this crisis has pushed over the fence. We saw on Monday a large company that owns several restaurant chains deciding to offer paid leave to all its workers. So employers can make that change as well without federal intervention.
Stith Family Farms tweets, we're a small family farm that sells meat locally direct to consumers. I'm concerned about our business if people are homebound, as well as concerned for my livestock if I were to be quarantined offsite. Who feeds them? John, I hear what you're saying about the opportunity to rethink employment and benefits in this country because we're in a crisis. Crises have a way of ending, and returning to business as usual has a lot of gravity and inertia in politics and in this economy. How good are we at lessons learned in situations like this? I mean, you're calling for a reevaluation of how we classify millions of workers, whether they're gig workers or just people in small businesses who have no sick leave. Are we going to learn from this?
You know, I really hope so. This is where leadership comes into play, and our national leaders have to be able to galvanize the nation in taking this tragedy and learning from it and taking the right collective actions. Unfortunately, the track record isn't very, very good. Look, when we had SARS and when we had MERS, we were pushing ahead as a scientific community to develop vaccines. And of course, as soon as that subsided, we stopped. And of course, that was misguided, right? Because if we had just spent the relatively small amounts of money to continue those vaccines, we would have more tools today to fight COVID-19. So our track record in being able to think long term is unfortunately not that good mixed, but hopefully the right leadership could take the crisis that we're in today and create the sort of foundational change that will help America in the future.
A lot of people are pointing out with our tweets and texts that universal health care, a social safety net, would help solve a lot of these problems. And that's their view. Therein lies a lot of the debate that's going on in our presidential politics right now. And it's worth a reminder, 160, 170 million Americans get their health care insurance through their employer. That is largely the way it's done in this country. And John Chuang is urging people to rethink how we think about employment. That might be one effect of this coronavirus challenge that we have in this country. John Chuang, CEO of Aquint. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
And Pamela Lopress, Senior Fellow at the Urban Institute. Pamela, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you 1A listeners who reached out. We appreciate you joining this conversation. We know there's a lot of challenges out there for you, so you being part of our conversation means a lot to us. This conversation was produced by Haley Blassingame and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, you can visit the website at the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. I'm Todd Zwillick. Until we meet again, this is 1A.